This is one of those nights that you're going, what am I here for? It's raining. It's nasty out there. Well, our online people have joined us. Thank you for joining us online. As somebody who escaped the north many, many years ago, you know how it is right now? Just lower the temperature about 40 degrees, pick up the wind by about 30 mile an hour with gusts of 40, and then live like that for several months. Now you're in Illinois or Kansas or, you know. So do we have love bugs? No, we do not. They even the love bugs are too smart to come up there. But maybe they've moved that way. I don't know. Those bugs seem invincible, don't they? We had them in Central Florida. You drive down the road and they're literally clouds of them. You know, your whole car would just, you couldn't. You had to stop at gas stations and do the scrub off thing and hope the gas station kept refilling that, because your windshield wiper, I mean, it was amazing. So the ones we have here are much lighter, but that's how it started there too. So they multiply. Yeah, that'd be a good illustration, wouldn't it, Danny? You know, every Christian should be a love bug. You know, there'd be a lot more of us if we were all little love bugs. You know, that could. Don't over-apply the analogy, okay? Don't over-apply it. Just love. Okay, we'll let that one go. Maybe it's not. Let Danny use that. I'm glad you're here tonight. We're going to do something a little bit different tonight. I'm going to jump ahead. I'm going to do some Life of Messiah stuff tonight, but it's not in the order in which we're in. You know, we're early in the Life of Messiah, looking at the birth of Jesus and now his dedication at the temple and meeting Simeon and then Anna, but we'll pick that up when I come back in a few weeks. Many of you know, Jen and I are going to be heading off on a sabbatical here. I think we leave Saturday or so, and so I thought I would look tonight at the topic of rest and why it's necessary. So I entitled tonight's Bible study "Rest or Come Apart," because that's really the reality in your life. You either find times of rest and restoration, or you come apart. Now, we all are wired a little bit differently. Some of us can go longer than others. You know, there are Mike Joneses, but even Mike Jones needs to take a rest every now and then. He doesn't know how to do it, does he, Joe and Josh? You know, I mean, I imagine every time the Jones reunion down on the beach happens, I think that is Mike's least favorite days of the year. There's no shed, there's no lifts, there's no broken cars. He doesn't know what to do. But we all are a little different, and you have to learn you. Now, when Jen and I arrived here almost 15 years ago, we really were just recovering from burnout. And it was interesting that when I met with the pulpit committee and I told them, I said, listen, if we come, I'd learned myself. And I said, every 7 years, Jen and I, Lord willing, if we can at all do it, we're going to take a sabbatical because I'm going to need restoration, you know. And the church here has done so well taking care of us that we really are, you know, how shall I say, way better here after 7 years of service than our first ministry. But that's primarily because of changes I made or we made in learning, and then the graciousness that you all have showed to us throughout these years. Because most churches, like if you study what a sabbatical is in the Southern Baptist, it's almost always 6 months or a year, you know. Y'all would kill me if I was gone for 6 months or a year. Actually, I'd kill too, because I have no desire to be. I would never last. I do not want to be away from this place for that long. So, you know, we're just talking a matter of a few weeks, but it's still important. But I was thinking tonight how fast 7 years goes by. Here it is, 2021. So the last time we took a sabbatical was 2014, and of course, many of you. Matter of fact, how many of you? I was curious tonight. How many of you were here in 2014? I know you were over here in this section. I know Josh. Joe, you kind of where you were. You were, okay, about, you know, maybe half of you here. I thought church-wide it'd be amazing. Now, we have a lot of military that come in and out, but it's amazing what goes on in 7 years and how quickly it just goes by. And it's exciting in one way, but I was thinking in the last 7 years, I was curious, can you think of anything related in your walk with the Lord and particularly here at our church, maybe that sticks out to you in the last 7 years, so from 2014, And I know this is like Sunday when I asked about 9/11. You all knew, could remember that right away. This is going to demonstrate the other, that you all have probably several things, but you won't be able to remember nothing. But I was just curious. I know we could all go back to the very beginning. I remember a lot of stuff from there, but I'm thinking 7 years ago. Well, the other half of you that didn't raise your hand mean that you arrived here in the last 7 years, right? Well, the most, you know, so it should be a little easier for you, because pretty much, do you remember anything? You know, for you guys, it's a little bit easier. Anybody at all? I'm just curious. Can you remember anyone in 7 years? Jeremy? Okay, you, has that been within 7 years ago? Boy, I say you. Then you're out. I said I knew it'd be close. I think it's pretty close. It's pretty close. So, but I'm going to go with your mother-in-law because she's always right. So, but that was still great. Yeah, Wanda Faye? Yeah, anything that happened in the last 7 years. Oh, you remember Lori blowing the shofar? Oh, yeah, just a few weeks ago. Yeah, yeah. You can still hear that in your ears, can't you? Yeah. When you know what's interesting is Lori has decided that, you know, they have a few dogs out on their property, and she's decided that the way she's going to train them to come back to the house at nighttime is she goes out in the front door and blows that thing. All the neighbors in the neighborhood, I'm sure, are just wondering, what is going on? You know, there's some Christian that's away from God going, man, was that the trumpet? Oh, man. Well, kind of, yeah, it was. Anybody else? Pastor Danny? Baptizing Rob Rowe. Yeah, he said trying to baptize Rob. Rob Rowe's a big dude. Yeah, I had Rob Scantlin. Big guy, you know, you just find a way. That's good. Anybody else? I thought it'd be interesting to start tonight. Okay. If not, we're going to be in Mark chapter 6 tonight in our Bible study that I've entitled Rest or Come Apart. I wanted to look at the biblical principle to illustrate the why of planned rest. And we're going to look at a couple different things. The first, we're going to look at a very familiar story, and it's the feeding of the 5,000, which if you know your Bible, know that it really was more than 5,000. That I think it's Matthew's account tells us that didn't include women and children, so it would have been a much bigger crowd than that, double, maybe triple, maybe more than that. I don't know, it was a big crowd. But I want us to see first the cause and the command to rest. And it's interesting that it's found around this story of the feeding of the 5,000, although there's actually more things going on. So in Mark chapter 6, let's read verse number 30 to 32, and then I'm going to pray, and then we're going to look into this, right? Let's read. And the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And he said unto them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. All right, let me pray, and then we'll look at this. Lord, thank you for the time tonight. Thank you for the opportunity to come together. Thank you for our church. Thank you for each person that's here. And Lord, I know that every life is a different story, different issues that are going on. And God, I pray that there'd be something from your word tonight that'd be a source of encouragement to them. And just help us to take a few moments and focus on your word. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so here in Mark chapter 6, we find that the context is the apostles. It says they gather themselves unto Jesus, and they told him all things that they had done and what they had taught. Now you say, what in the world is that? What are you talking about? Well, this again is where when you bring all four gospel accounts together and you put the timeline together about what's happening, remember, outside of Luke, the other gospel accounts are not written chronologically. The Middle Eastern mindset is not the Western mindset. And the other gospel accounts are more thematic, and so they would take something that happened earlier and put it after something that happened. You know, they weren't as concerned about that. And one of the mistakes that a lot of times Christians make is they'll read in the gospel and say, well, chapter 6 did this and chapter 7 did this, so therefore what happened in chapter 6 must have come before it happened in chapter 7. Not necessarily. Now, here we know in the lives of the apostles that Jesus had just recently sent them out on what I call one of their faith missions, where he said, I want you guys to go out and spread the word. Now, this was after the unpardonable sin, and so unlike some people think they went out to evangelize everybody, that really wasn't their mission. A lot of people will preach on the passages of that story talking about our responsibility, the fields are wide and hard to harvest, and that's true, But really what Jesus was doing, he was sending them out to people that really had believed in him when some of the big crowds, but he wanted them to know that he had been rejected and that tough times were about to come. So don't let the tough times get you discouraged. The Messiah is here, and he is the light of the world, and he is salvation. But things you're going to be, if you believe in Messiah, what they would have thought was, well, if Messiah's here, I believe in him. He's going to set up a kingdom. This is all going to be great. I'm going to be on the winning team, so to speak. Jesus said, hey, things are going to get bad. So I want you guys to go out there and spread the word that, okay, this is what's coming. Don't lose the faith. And so they did, and they lived by faith, and they came back, and they shared all the things, the miracles they did, and the things that they had taught. So they're really tired. The other thing that had happened in line of sequence is it hadn't been that long, and John Baptist had been martyred. And John Baptist, as you know, is, you know, Jesus' forerunner, cousin, relative, probably highly thought of. Most of these guys were reached originally by John Baptist and his preaching, and now all of a sudden he's imprisoned and now he's beheaded. You know, you're looking at it going, whoa, man, Lord, what's going on here? He's that can't happen to him. And so there were, I guess what I put in my notes is, why is there a cause and command to rest? Is, first off, a lot of times it's necessary in the scope of life when big life events occur. And you say, well, what's a big life event? Well, I can't totally describe that for every one of you, but I think you know what it is. Maybe it's you encounter a serious illness. You have a serious loss. You have a serious job issue. You have a relationship issue. You go through a financial, there's a lot of different things, and you go through those kind of things. You're coming out the other side. You're weary. You say, I've just spent the last year just keeping my head above water, you know, and now, you know, and Jesus said, y'all have served, you've been out there ministering, and you've been through some things, and now the hurt of losing someone that we love, and you don't understand why he's gone, and why didn't God intervene and protect him, and Jesus said, you need to come yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. And now, I want to start tonight because I know the question that I would love to be able to articulate in 5 minutes to answer this coming question is in your mind. Probably everybody listening, at least most of you, are saying, Pastor, you do not understand how busy I am and all the demands on my time. How in the world can I ever rest? That is a very difficult question to which I'm not going to pretend there's some easy answer I can give you. I acknowledge and recognize, just like the disciples, when Jesus sent them out on their mission, they, for a season, they were out there living by faith, and Jesus told them what to do, go into these different cities, find the people who identify with me, stay in their houses for a while, you know, share with them the good news that I am here, but things are going to get bad. And they'd been traveling all over the place, and they were tired. And for a season, they were burning pretty hot. There are going to be seasons in your life where that is the situation. But if you think you can consistently live your life always burning it hot, you violate biblical teaching and the reality of who you are, that you are not limitless in your energy and your supply of emotion and everything. You're a human being. And sometimes we don't want to admit the fact that we are mere mortals. And so I'm not going to sit here and say I can answer all that question other than to say that if you don't find a way to get it done and you don't do it with intentionality, it's not eliminate the fact that you can't continue to run hot the entirety of your life. I know I encourage, and you guys, I hope Jen and I, we try to set an example and y'all help us, you know, that I can guarantee you, Jenny and I would not still be in ministry if we didn't take annual cruises, which boo-hoo-hoo-hoo, right now I don't know what's going to happen because, you know, you take the jab or you don't get on the boat, you know. Oh, us nasty unvaccinated. Okay, don't even get me going. But for us, that was very much a preservation. But I will share this with you that my wife isn't here. If you're watching tonight, she's sitting in the back, so if I'm lying, I'm dying. but Hey, my wife thought that was funny. Okay. Yeah. I'm not very tall. I'm not very handsome, but I could make her laugh. You know, that was my thing. Her and I getting away together with just the two of us without the kids did not begin after I got into ministry. We had set that precedent in our marriage before I got into ministry, and I think it's one of the critical reasons why, to the grace of God, we've survived a long time in ministry. Because there needs to be at least once a year where your little bubbies and little girlies, they'll survive. Especially, you know, now I'm not judging everybody's circumstance. Sometimes you got situations, I get it. But your kids can survive with the grandparents unless you've got really awful in-laws or something. But I love my in-law. My mother and father-in-law saved us and watched the kids and did stuff. But if you don't have each other, are you really going to be as effective with your kids as you otherwise could be? Number two, did you ever covenant with any of your children? No. The only one you covenanted with before God, which is a serious thing, is your spouse. And so they need to be first. And any couple, and there's a couple couples in here that have been married for an extended period of time, I'll tell you, as you all looking at me online, they are shaking their head in agreement with what I am saying. It is a difference maker, because life is crazy and you go on and the demands are great and the pressures are great, and you got to slow down. And so I imagine everybody here tonight has felt this way, that you're just overwhelmed and life is crazy. And, you know, I've often said that's why I've come to realize that's why young adults are best to rear children. Because by the time you even get to my age, I just don't have it in the energy tank. Now, I know what all you young moms are saying. I don't have it either, but trust me. I know you're tired now, but wait till you're 40, 50, 60. You'll be tireder. You know, it doesn't end. So you young adults, you're well geared to do this. Y'all can do it. And I know, you know, it life goes by. But all of us need times of rest. So Jesus tells them they needed to come apart into a desert place and rest a while. They needed an extended break. But what's interesting in this story is, as we're going to see, they don't find it. Now, I think it's a little stodgy in here. Do you guys think it's a little warm in here? You guys look like you're all fanning. You want some air? I'm getting a witness from all over. Martha's the only one saying no. You're getting outvoted, Martha. Preston, you need something? You need some air? Oh, listen to him. He's good. Oh, you know, Pastor Danny, you got your phone with you? Can you dump this one down 1 degree or something? It'll just one degree. Yes, you're a mom. We do it. We're afraid of moms. So 1 degree. How about this side over here? You guys should be hot over here. No? Okay. They don't have an air conditioner over here at this point. Hopefully this fall that'll be fixed and you guys will be froze out over here too. Let's move on in our story. Verse 33. So, all right, they get in the ship. They go into a desert place privately. Now, notice in verse 33, and the people saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran afoot thither out of all cities, and outwent them, and came together unto him. Now, this, is fascinating. Jesus had been teaching and doing his thing on one side of the Sea of Galilee in the area north of the sea, north end of the Sea of Galilee or so. And he gets in the boat, and we find out that he's going to go over to a town in Bethsaida from one of the other gospel accounts. And they're going to get in the boat, and they're going to go straight across the Sea of Galilee, if you know the little sea up there. And Dr. Fruitenbaum says it's about 6 or 7 miles as the crow flies. So if they went by boat, 6 or 7 miles. But the people saw them getting into the boat and saw the basic direction they were heading and made an estimation. And what they did is they ran along the shore around the outer end. Now, if you know your mathematics, what's the middle line called? The hypotenuse, is that right? I'm looking at math. You don't even know, Hunter? Okay, he's like, okay. All right. The plumber knows more than the mathematician over here. No, I'm just kidding you. Then going all the way around. You know, I know in the right triangle, the length of the hypotenuse is less than the sum of the two right angles, right? Or the lengths. I don't know. Right. Get out of math, Pastor Ken. It's not your thing. The long story is, Dr. Fruitenbaum says basically by land it was between 10 to 13 miles. So these guys were in a boat going this way in a straight line. The people are over here, and they're going, you know, almost twice as far. And yet the story tells us by the time Jesus and the disciples get to the other side, the people are waiting for them. Man, those people that talk about who needed a rest, right? Those people were hoofing it, man. I don't know if they did the speed walking or what they did, but they get there. One of the things I can't not comment on here, because I've seen this true in ministry, it is amazing to me how much people will do when they really want God. That was a long way to run and walk, and now, as we're going to discover, they probably were anticipating that Jesus was going to do a miracle and whatever, you know, they probably had more desire for physical stuff than they did spiritual. That there's certainly some truth to that, but when I encounter a lot of people, most of the time, when people who are away from God, they call me and they want to meet with me, it's because they want God to fix something in their life tangible. They want God to, now their marriage is in problem. Now they have no money. Now they, whatever it is, and they want God all of a sudden to store. And it's amazing to me how they can find my phone number, the phone number of the church, how they can find a way to my house or Pastor Danny's house or other people's house when they need something. Man, if we could get that kind of commitment just because we love God. And it's hard to find. It's amazing what people will do to get to you when they want something from you. And probably most of us have felt that way one way or another. Matter of fact, I wrote in my notes, I said, probably nobody can understand this more than a mom. I mean, moms, I mean, I'm on this side of, now we're grandparents. Grandparents are great because I love being a grandparent because we give the children back. I love them and I spoil them and I give them candy, well, whatever Boo can eat or whatever Oliver's kids can. We give them whatever they really want, let's be honest. Right? We spoil them and then we give them back. Moms live a life that everybody wants something from them all the time. I mean, the kids want something. The spouse, the husband wants something. If you're like Jenny and I and you work together in the same, you know, there's job demands. And then there's the parents and the in-laws that want something. Can't you come over tonight? You always come over. My mother-in-law would never do that. Maybe if you're young enough, you have grandparents that you now are, as a young adult, young mom, you feel responsible to help grandparents out. The phone company wants you. The extended car warranty people want you. The grocery store wants you. The doctor's office is calling. It's endless. You know, and I know you say, well, that's why I got married. I thought my husband would help me. Well, there was your first problem. You didn't get help. You just got somebody else who wants something from you. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. There's some of you husbands. This is why you guys know I'm a domesticated guy here. My wife, again, will tell you, I will help her out. I like doing the dishes. Well, I don't like it, but I do them for her. I don't mind vacuuming. She doesn't let me mess with the laundry because I've messed them up. I finally like doing laundry now. Because now the laundry machines look like computers. And they make noises and beeps. And they have all these special cycle things that I can play with and say, I wonder if I put it on this one, what will it do? And Jenny's not as interested in me finding out what will it do. And so I stay away from that one. But moms have it on them all the time. And that's why I know moms are probably the hardest ones to find times of rest. But on the other side of the coin, I think they're the ones that need it the most, which is why I'm hard on dads often, that I understand dads work long hours, and many of you dads, and not that moms don't. We have several moms in the building here tonight that work outside of the home. And you know, they do all that, and they do all this other stuff. And I find no excuse in Scripture to be able to say, oh, I worked today, and so now when I come home, you know, it's my time to rest, and mom does everything. No, get off your backside and help the woman. And if you think that her job is so much easier than yours, I challenge you to change with her for a week or two, and you'll beg to go to work. Because work is a vacation compared to what she does all day. But that's, all right, mom, I'm not even getting any love from the moms on here, but that's the truth. At least it wasn't my life. I would say, please let me go back to work. The office is calling. But what I find interesting in our story here is, as we're going to find, that the people meet and they come around, there they are waiting. Now, if you were in that boat with the disciples and you're on the edge of burnout and you've worked really hard and you see the crowd waiting for you, what is your attitude towards that crowd? Mine's pretty negative. Mine is, can we get the outboard motor started up and let's leave Bethsaida and head back over to the other side. Maybe they're tired. They won't be able to outrun us this next time. We'll head back over to Capernaum or something. But Jesus doesn't do that. The Bible tells us that Jesus looked on the crowd and he had compassion on them. He doesn't run them off. You know, Peter's the one that speaks up, so send him away. You know, I love Peter. I agreed with him. You know, I still agree with him, even though I know the rest of the story. I'm going to be honest and say, I would have said, Jesus, can't we just run these people off? I'm exhausted. You said we were going on vacation. You said there was going to be a resort over here. Just kidding. All right, little. Look at the story, verse 34. And Jesus, when he came out, saw much people and was moved with compassion towards them because they were a sheep having not a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. Remember, the Jewish perspective here, he's not just seeing them aimlessly as a bunch of sheep. It's because in the Jewish mindset, they understood that the rabbinic teachers, they were the shepherds. And Jesus had challenged the existing shepherds to what they were teaching, saying, the Pharisees are teaching you wrong. I am the true shepherd. And the people didn't know who to believe. And so that's Jesus looks at them and realizes they're still in this valley of indecision on, do we believe the old shepherds or do we follow this new one? Verse 35 says, and the day was now far spent, and his disciples came unto him and said, this is a desert place, and now the time is far past. Send them away, that they may go into the country round about and into the villages and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat. Oh, I love this. Boy, oh, boy, boy, they say, hey, Jesus, all right, we've answered their questions a little bit, we've ministered to them a little bit, and now they're looking for a reason to send them away. I've done that before. Hey, it's getting a little bit late. Y'all get out of here. But that's not what happens in the story. We have the story instead of the feeding of the 5,000. And in my mind, I thought, what about the rest? Whose idea was it that they needed to get apart and have rest? It's Jesus's. But now, who is the one that is saying we are going to deal with these people? Jesus is. You know, I don't always understand the way the Lord leads me. And this was certainly a test of faith, and Jesus is going to use this as a lesson. But as many of you know, I have this philosophy of life that I call in the Christian life the one more thing approach. And it's just one of my personal theories of spiritual life, and it goes like this. When you are at your worst, and you are at your lowest, and you are the most burnt out, God's going to ask you to do one more thing. You're not going to like it. You're not going to want to be there. But Jesus is going to say, here's 5,000 people. We got to take care of them. I don't like it when he does that. And I haven't always passed every one of those tests, but I will tell you this. The times that I have passed those tests are where the times I've seen Jesus, quote-unquote, feed the 5,000, where I've seen him provide in ways beyond myself, because I knew I was done. Dr. Frutenbaum gives three lessons here that I want to make, and I'll stop for tonight. I told Pastor Danny, since this is my last night, I was going to take as long as I wanted to take tonight, so prayer request time might be a little shorter. That's on me, not on Pastor Danny. But hey, you can make it up next week. Pastor Danny's only got a 5-minute Bible study anyway. It's all he can talk, 5 minutes. just kidding. three things. Number one, that Jesus wanted to teach, and these are three lessons that I think you and I need to learn as we're entering issues of rest. Number one, they were responsible for feeding the sheep. Now, I'm going to transition a little bit here and apply some of this to me as a pastor, but I think as a Christian, you have a responsibility to feed somebody. In the New Testament era, if you're a believer, it's not all about you. That if you are living the Christian life the way Jesus desires you to live it and the way the Holy Spirit leads you, you are responsible to feed someone else. Now, if you're a mom, you already got several miles around the table. I get it. There's physical feeding, but there's also spiritual feeding. There's somebody, and there needs to be somebody in your life that God says, hey, I want you to reach out to them. And by the way, when you reach out to them, it doesn't necessarily mean they're always going to do the right thing. We're going to find these 5,000, not necessarily they all follow Jesus when he does for them. It just means that if God tells you to do something, by faith, you just do it. And realize that every Christian has a responsibility to feed the sheep. Now, as a pastor, that, according to the New Testament, that goes up another notch. You guys have heard me say this, and I'll say it again because it's a biblical truth. The only clear biblical reason to pay a pastor financially is if they teach the Word of God. That's why I brought Pastor Danny here as an assistant pastor. He's my numbers guy, my schedule guy. He's everything I'm not. Sometimes it annoys me. Most of the time I annoy him. But I need him. But when he came here, I didn't say to him, the number one thing I need you to do is organize all of our classes, which he does. Number one thing I need you to do is organize the websites needed to be done. The number one thing you're going to come here to do is teach the Word of God. If a pastor can't do that, everything else doesn't matter. Now, things do matter, but I'm thankful that I brought the same thing with Pastor Cody in the youth group. You're a youth pastor. Number one thing you need to do and be able to do is teach the Word of God. Dr. Fruitenbaum said this, one of my quotes for tonight. It is not the job of the sheep to look for food, but it is the job of the shepherd to feed the sheep. That is good. It is not the job of the sheep to look for food. It's the job of the shepherd to feed the sheep. Just like as a parent, if I've been picking on moms and I'm not picking on them, elevating them. You know, your kids don't care about where the food comes from. They just want to be fed. And if they're not, they're kind of irritating, shall we say, annoying. Then they become teenagers and they can eat everything. This is what Jesus told Peter after the Lord's resurrection. Remember what he said when he went to Peter and said, if you love me, feed my sheep. Peter, if you love me, this is how you demonstrate it. You know, the South, when I took a church here, the stereotypical problems here in the South, which probably overplayed a little bit, but some truth to it. A lot of times in the South, the idea of being a pastor in the South is what you are everybody's maidservant. And every time they have a split toenail or they have a cold, you're expected to be there weeping and gnashing of teeth and praying over them, you know. No, my number one job is to feed the sheep. It's the church's job primarily to take care of one another. Now, it doesn't mean that pastors don't do any of those things. Don't misunderstand me, but some churches take it a little bit far. Y'all have been fantastic, but that's because from the very beginning, you know, y'all jumped on board and you're tough people and most of you don't want me around. And I appreciate that. You know, get away. What are you doing here? Feed the sheep. This is what an under-shepherd does. And Peter went on to write in his epistle, feed the flock of God. And one of the reasons that a pastor needs to go on a sabbatical or get a time of rest is because it's very depleting feeding the sheep over and over and over again. If you've ever been a Sunday school teacher or, in our place, a growth group leader, and you have to teach a Bible lesson once a week, every week, our Awana teachers, by the end of the school year, are ready for a break. And they need one, by the way. That's once a week. When I first went into ministry, and I was in my mid-30s, so I'd been in business, and I'd ran retirement centers. I'd done a lot of things before I went into full-time ministry. But my first ministry, I taught a Sunday school Sunday morning before the morning service. I preached the morning service. I preached the evening service. We had a Christian school, and I did chapel. And then I oversaw a staff of 40 people at a Christian school of 350 people. And I preached Wednesday night. I don't know how I did it. But I will tell you this, it's why I'm not there. When we came here, I said, and I look at the New Testament, I don't think the New Testament was, Paul went to some city and said, it's always going to be about me. No, Paul went someplace, led people to Christ, discipled them, and made the church about more than just him. And that is why I encourage, and I, Brother Brock, believe it or not, has something to say. I don't know if I understand it, but he has something to say. No, he does. And Pastor Danny and other guys, and that's why we're always trying, now that I'm going to be gone, I know some of the guys are going to step up, and I hope they do. You know, now, not everybody is gifted for the gift of teaching. I'm not trying to say you just have to do this, but there's things that you can do and get involved in ministry to help feed somebody else, and everybody ought to be involved in it. Jesus used the example of feeding people both physically and spiritually, and that's the model we should follow. All right, the second thing I want you to see, not only were they responsible to feed the sheep, The second thing that I identify with a lot, in verse 37, we find that they were incapable of feeding the sheep. Notice verse 37, he said unto them, give ye them to eat. There's the command, feed them. And they say unto him, shall we go and buy 200 penny worth of bread and give them to eat? Wow. And he saith unto them, how many loaves have ye? Go and see. And when they knew, they say, 5 and 2 fishes. And he commanded them to make sit down by companies upon the green grass. And they sat down in ranks by hundreds and by fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, he looked up to heaven and blessed and brake the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before them. And the 2 fishes divided he among them all. And they all did eat and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of fragments and the 12 and of the fishes. And they that did eat of the loaves were about 5,000 men. And straightway he constrained his disciples to get into the ship to go to the other side before unto Bethsaida while he sent the people away. Back to rest. So he does get them there to rest. But number one, he tells them it's your job to feed them. The second thing he wants them to know is they were incapable of feeding them. I mean, Jesus said, give them something to eat. That's your responsibility. You ever, a guy like me says, hey, feed the sheep. And you say, wait a minute, I don't have a Bible degree. What do I do? Trust me, that feeling of insufficiency is one that goes through life with us. It's interesting in John's account, because this story is told in all 4 gospel accounts. In John's account, we find out that Jesus, when he asks them, you know, about how much it's going to, you know, feed them and how can we feed them, he singles out Philip. It's fascinating to me. Again, Dr. Fruitenbaum and learning from the Jewish perspective and seeing this stuff. Early when Philip was called, we find that Philip was from this very area. This was Philip's hometown area. Philip knew, unlike anybody else of the disciples, that there were no super Walmarts anywhere near. There was no Publix anywhere near. There was not a railway station anywhere near. Philip knew there's no way, even if we had the money, which would have taken, you know, a year's wages, basically, to feed this kind of crowd, even if we had the money, we can't do it. Jesus, before your time of rest, wants you to understand and me to understand that in and of myself, I am unable. I can't do it in and of myself. There's not enough of me to go around. A sabbatical is a reminder the pastors are the under-shepherds of the great shepherds, and we are not able of ourselves, and our strength is limited. I imagine everybody in here tonight can... If I were to ask you, do you ever remember a time in your life in the last several years when you went too far and you were burnt out? If you remember one of those times in your life, and again, a lot of times it happens when you have, again, a big event or you've given a lot. It can be produced because you did some good things, not necessarily just because you were a bad person. You just went longer than you should have went. Let me ask you something. What type of decisions did you make during that time? How many of you made some of the best life decisions you ever made when you were operating in burnout? You did? That's because you were getting destroyed. That's different. I could give Stacy a story, but I won't because I'm afraid of you. Because Preston tells me to. How about your reactions? You know, I tend to, when I get to the end of it, that's when I start getting, you know, that's when Rick Potter, bless Brother Rick, Rick Potter would pull me aside and say, Pastor Ken, you're getting a little short. I said, I know, Rick, I'm already shorter than you. What's new? He goes, no. You know, you need a break. And he would go behind my back, and him and Matt and Jenny were, and the next thing I know, I've got reservations at some hotel somewhere, you know, so I wouldn't say something to some of y'all that I couldn't take back. It can be a very dangerous time. I think, as Stacy's mentioning, there's a blessing in learning, arriving at the conclusion that you are not enough. Because until you realize that you are not enough, you won't realize that he is enough. Until we arrive that I'm not enough, that's when you give up on the idea that you can handle and solve every problem. We can't. Some issues of life, no matter how hard you try, there they stay. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Number three, and I'll be done. The third lesson he gives them is they were to distribute what Jesus provided. We read in the story in verse 41 that when he had taken the five loaves, he looked up to heaven, he blessed and broke the loaves. So he prays, he breaks them. And one of the interesting things in this account and others, when you look at it as a whole, is Jesus just didn't pray and get the baskets and then just start going, all right, here's the food. And, you know, people, a big mass of 5,000 people, you know, throwing, you know, Jesus is, get one of those guns like they use at the NBA games or, the, you know, shooting it up into the 30th row. You know, no. There was organizational. This is where you need the gifts like Pastor Danny has mentioned that come into play. He sat them down by ranks and by 50s, and there was this organizational structure. I don't even know, I wonder, and some theologians and commentators write, if the people, when they were eaten of the feeding of the 5,000, if initially they even knew it was a miracle. All they knew is they were getting fish and loaves because somebody was giving it to them. You know, it's interesting. This whole story proves that Jesus is the main source, as he would teach, he is the bread of life. And one of the best reasons for a time of rest, or in my case as a pastor, time for a sabbatical, is it allows a pastor some time to focus on being fed as opposed to feeding. Because even when you allow the Lord to be the source and you're the conduit, you just get depleted over time. And it's just a time for me, and I would encourage you, a time for rest to get closer to the hand of Jesus, so that as he gives you manna, you can give it to somebody else. But you cannot feed someone with something you do not have. And the only real source of any goodness or anything that you and I have to share with anybody comes from him. And so you need to take some rest times, some quiet times to hear from him. That's why when we go, you know, I've got a whole list of books I'm going to read. I'm going to read some books on leadership. I've got a theology book. I've got an evangelism book that Pastor Danny gave me that I'm going to read. I've got a couple Christian fiction things I'm going to read. I got a bunch of stuff. I can't wait for some rest, some stillness, some meditation of the word. Jen and I are going to spend a day at the Ark Encounter, I think, if I can get one of those little electric cars. I'm going to humble myself and get one of those, you know, believe that or not, you know. So Jenny, I'm sure we'll get a picture of that. But I just don't know if I can walk that anymore, and I want to see everything. Maybe they'll have like a slip and slide at the top of the Ark. Wouldn't it be cool, Brock, if they had that? Do they have one of those like at the top? They do? Oh, a trolley kind of thing? They have a zip line? $100? Is it as good as the Joneses zip line? 5 times better than the Joneses. Ooh, you just got dogged, Mike. I liked it. What's that? Yeah. Mike says this is a lot cheaper. Yeah, but you got to climb up on the trash can and on all the things to get on there. And you know you're on a real Jones zip line because the Joneses would have this no other way. At the end of the zip line, there's not like those little springs that click, 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 slow you down. There's just an old worn out mattress next to a brick wall that you slam into. That's how you stop on the Jones zip line. But I've done it because I'm a man of great faith. Yeah, and because Stephen caught me at the end. Yeah, that's right. Stephen caught me. He ran down ahead like the people here and helped me out. He wanted to keep me around. Bless Stephen. No, you know, bless Stephen Harry. Today, it's just hard to find good people to start with. Our nation, I don't think any of us would disagree that it's harder and harder to find people with integrity as a nation as we are teaching ungodliness in the educational system. But there's also in the ministry, there's a dearth. It's hard finding pastors. I'm telling you. Now, I don't say that to be self-serving. Y'all know I don't have any desire to leave here. It's hard to find them, though. And I'll tell you what, even if you happen to find a pastor that's pretty good, I have learned you had better know his wife very well as well. So now you have to not only find one person that really wants to do what God wants them to do and is gifted in the ministry, you need to find two. And that is why, you know, I remember, you know, I felt strong that we ought to bring Pastor Danny and Rebecca here, because I don't know, maybe it's my lack of faith, and I'm being honest with you, I just don't know if I have the faith to hire folks anymore. It's just hard. You just, you know, you folks are so important to me. I don't trust just anybody. But I know not only him, but I know his wife. And they both love the Lord and love us and love this church. And Pastor Cody and Erica. Erica's been around here a long time. So I'm a very blessed man. And I know we are not by far the biggest church, and I've long since given up on that as a goal. But God has used us as a church family to change a lot of lives. And I think as these end days come, all the bravado that is often carried off in American Christianity is exactly that. And I want to continue what the Lord has given us here. And by and large, it's been 15 years. We've had our battles. We've went through some tough times, but it's been good. And I'm as ready to keep going as I've ever been. And it's because y'all have been so gracious to grant me the space when I've needed it, the time away when I've needed it. And I think as a church, I think it's a much wiser decision than, you know, slave driving a pastor and then he burns out and then he causes problems and he breaks apart the church and lives are destroyed and on and on and on it goes. I recently, you know, have watched and a church that I care very deeply for go through some very difficult times. And it doesn't take a whole lot to break apart a church. So I thank you for allowing Jen and I some times away and letting us go for a little bit to rest and restore and reset. You know, thank you for investing in us. And we're excited to see what the Lord does through our church as we move forward. I also want to, before I close, I only give you 10 minutes. See, I talked for 50 minutes. I told you I was going to take time tonight. I do want to thank Pastor Danny and Rebecca and Pastor Cody and Erica. I really honestly have, in the old days, and Michelle, some of you know that have been here longer, whenever I leave town, I stressed out about you guys. It was hard for me to let go. I don't struggle with that as much anymore because I have such confidence in Pastor Danny and Rebecca and you guys, you know, it's God's church. And so I'm ready to go. Now our family, on the other hand, and Don, that's a little different, but, pray for Whitney. Whitney's going to kind of be stepping in for Jenny for a little bit with Don. So pray for Whitney. You're going to do great, Whitney. There'll be no problems. But I do. I thank y'all so much for what you guys do for us. It is awesome. All right. Thanks for tuning in. And I'm sorry I went on a little bit longer, but hey, you don't have to listen to this me ramble on for a while. Several weeks. We'll be gone for three or four Sundays, I think, moving up here. So we got Pastor Danny has some things. You got some things planned, don't you? There's my detail guy going, ugh. All right. Thank you for tuning in tonight. God bless you. We'll see you later. Pastor Danny's going to come give us some time for some prayer requests. And I only give you 10 minutes, so I don't know what you want to do with it, but knock yourself out, I guess.
So speaking of.